Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Autism and Scouting Radio, your source for acceptance, enrichment, inspiration, and empowerment within the Autism and Asperger's Scouting communities. Our show will be starting shortly. To listen to archives of previous broadcasts, visit www.autismempowerment.org and click on the Autism and Scouting or Autism Empowerment Radio tab. As a nonprofit charity, we rely on public generosity to fund our programs, special events, support services, and radio broadcasting. Thank you for considering a tax-deductible donation today. Our show is now beginning.
Hello, and welcome back to Autism and Scouting Radio. Again, my name is John Critch, and I'll be your host today. Autism and Scouting Radio is part of the Autism and Scouting program. This is one of our core programs at Autism Empowerment, among many others, that we bring to you as a nonprofit. To get more information both about Autism Empowerment and Autism and Scouting program, after the broadcast, feel free to visit the website at www.autismempowerment.org. You can join us on Facebook and Twitter as well. If you have interest in any upcoming broadcasts or listening to any of the previous broadcasts in the archive or via podcast, you can get all of that information there as well. I first want to thank so much our guest yesterday, Karen Mansfield from Troop 5280. This is a transitional troop in the Denver, Colorado area. Yesterday's show, we talked about advancement. It's already getting a lot of people talking, and we've had a lot of comments already that they're saying that they're going to make sure that they have their scoutmasters listen to the show. What we really tried to do yesterday is explore the difference between what an adaptation is, which means something that you need to, changing a requirement, which needs to go through a whole process for a requirement in Boy Scouts, and what an accommodation is, where you don't need that whole process, where all you need is a scoutmaster's approval. And a simple accommodation can go a long way to providing support to the scouts in their road to advancement. So after listening to our show today, I strongly suggest you go back and listen to that one and then share that with your scoutmasters, assistant scoutmasters, and whatnot. If you'd like to share your scouting story or have any ideas for upcoming broadcasts, we're already starting to book into early November. We have Jennifer Cook O'Toole, who just released another book recently about Asperger tips when dealing with kids on the Asperger syndrome. And we'll be having her back talking about unlocking a scout's special interests. That's definitely one you're not going to want to miss. But today we have a new guest coming on Autism and Scouting Radio. We've already booked her. She's going to be coming back next Thursday and talking about Asperger's and Girl Scouting. So I'm really excited about that one because Girl Scouting is an area that I really want to be able to focus on and support as well, not just the Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts and the different scouting organizations around the world, but definitely support the Girl Scouts and their efforts as well. But today's show is more of an inspirational kind of tone. Inspire is one of the four foundational pillars of Autism Empowerment, and it's one of those key factors, I think, in providing success for scouts. If you can inspire a scout leader, inspire the families, scouting will be just a much better place for everybody. So today's theme is your scout can and will be successful. Lindsay Foster, our guest today, is an amazing mom and scout leader. She's currently the Cub Master for Cub Scout Pack 318 in the great state of Texas, and she's also the co-leader of Girl Scout Troop 2702. She has a long history as a scout leader, both in the Girl Scouts and in Boy Scouts, wearing a whole variety of different hats. She's written a Commissioner's College thesis when working with scouts with special needs. After this, we're going to be putting up the link to that on our website and also on our blog sites, so you can access that as well. We have a lot to talk to her about, so let's go ahead and get her online. Welcome, Lindsay.
Hi there.
How's it in Texas today?
It's a little warm. I think we set high again today, but that's okay. I'm waiting for the fall weather.
Yeah, I hear you there. Let me ask you the first question. I typically ask most of our first-time guests. You know, there's a lot of times scout leaders will focus on something of very intense interest to them, either hiking, camping. The big push now is in Boy Scouts, the STEM, the science, technology, engineering, and math. Why your interest in special needs and that focus on special needs?
Well, I got interested in special needs because I have two of my three children are diagnosed on the autism spectrum. They both have Asperger's. One is more a little more Aspy than the other. But I found that scouting seems to attract kids with special needs, whether they have ADD or ADHD or some form of compulsive disorder. There's just a wide variety of stuff, but because of the structure of scouting, a lot of kids end up in the scouting program because it is a structured program. And so it became really important to me personally, not just as a parent of scouts with special needs, but as a leader to educate people so that they could better deal with those scouts in their units, because either they were pushing them off or they were expressing frustration because I was a roundtable commissioner. And so it just became really important to me to find a way to make it work for everybody.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you said all three of your children are in scouts, correct?
Yes, they are.
What levels or where are they in the different scouting programs?
My oldest son, my 13-year-old, is a first-class scout. He just got his first-class rank in Troop 147 out of Azle. And so he's working toward Eagle, which has been his goal since he was a Wolf Cub Scout.
Awesome.
He joined as a Wolf Cub. And my middle child is 11, and she is just became a cadet Girl Scout. She's in sixth grade, and she's been in Girl Scouts since she was a first grade brownie. And then my youngest is a fourth grade Weebelow Scout. And he started as a tiger, well, as a little brother in a Cub Scout unit, and then he became a tiger, so.
That sounds that my oldest is a Star Scout, and my youngest is actually a Tiger. And last night, our first pack meeting, my other Tigers were like, oh, we're all going to be Eagles someday, right? I was like, well, if you put your mind to it. But, yeah, it's so neat to see the young kids be inspired when they see the older Scouts.
Absolutely.
Today is about inspiration and knowing that the Scouts can be successful when they can. Sometimes they have setbacks. What have been the biggest challenges for your kids, and how did they work around them, or if they didn't work around them, how are they dealing with those?
Well, for my daughter, it's probably easiest to talk about my daughter first because she struggles more and was diagnosed with Asperger's first. She was diagnosed in second grade, and she's currently in sixth grade. So she was diagnosed 4 years ago. But as a Girl Scout, you know, obviously the big thing that Girl Scouts do, everybody knows, is sell cookies. And she is very, you know, very, very much black and white, which is very typical for kids on the spectrum. You know, they see the world as not having very many shades of gray, if any at all. And so it's very hard for her to have heard the rule, you know, you don't talk to strangers and you don't approach strangers. And then every year have to go out and put herself out there and sell cookies, because every year we struggle with that. In our area, we do what's called booth sales or tabletop sales, where we get the cookies ahead of time and we direct sell to people. And she has a really hard time approaching people because of her Asperger's. You know, she looks at their feet instead of looking them in the eye when she's making a sale and making contact. And it is difficult for her to walk up to a stranger and say, would you like to buy a box of Girl Scout cookies? For the past 2 years, she sold over 1,000 boxes of cookies in the past 2 years. And that's been a tremendous effort for her. The first time she did it on the very last day of cookie sales. And she knew that she was only 83 boxes, I think it was. She would know. She always knows. Her memory It was incredible. But she was 83 or 84 boxes away from 1,000. And we went to the location where she was supposed to sell at a grocery store. And there was another little girl who was a Daisy Girl Scout who was there from a completely different troop in our council. And Mary Grace said, you know, she was upset, but she said the little girl hadn't gotten a chance to sell any cookies that year. And so Mary Grace said, well, the rest of my troop is at the mall selling cookies, so I'll go with them and you can have this location. And so we left. And I got on my cell phone and called my co-leader and said, we're on our way to the mall. There's been a mix-up, and they booked two troops at the grocery store, so we're coming. And there were two girls that were just picking up, you know, just filling in the slot at the mall. And it was really an amazing day because for Mary Grace, she was selling those cookies, you know, and she was working really hard and doing her thing. But the other two girls that were there that had already sold more than 1,000 boxes stayed to help her because they decided, and they gave, instead of taking the cookies that they were selling and putting them toward their count, they donated them toward Mary Grace's count, and they helped her sell those last 84 boxes. They went around the mall and got people to come down to the table, and they were very much supportive because they said, you know, we've already met our goal, but, you know, you say the law says that we need to be a sister to every Girl Scout, so we're going to stay and help her sell cookies. And we have, in fact, my co-leader still has the picture from 2 years ago of the woman who bought the 1,000th box of cookies from Mary Grace.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. I still tear up when I tell the story of how, you know, it was so difficult and it was such a struggle. You know, it was getting down to the last minute and we were worried, and it was just an amazing turn of events.
That's great, because we actually we did a show on Monday about fundraising, and then we're going to be posting a blog probably either today or tomorrow dealing exactly with what you're talking about with fundraising and how difficult it is sometimes with kids, because it's very black and white. It's like you tell the kids from a young age, don't talk to strangers, don't talk to strangers. Now you're asking them to go door to door sometimes and to talk to strangers. So
absolutely. And you're contradicting yourself, and they don't understand it. So it is a challenge. For my oldest, it's, you know, the transition from Cubs to Boy Scout has been a challenge. He's very emotionally in tune with people, and he takes the cares of the world on his shoulders. And so it's been hard for him because he's in a fantastic unit that's been very supportive for him. But there are times where there are a lot of boys who are very, masculine and very strong. And
right.
He's kind of the 98-pound weakling. And so he's a thinker. He just got elected quartermaster of his troop. So he's working on organizing the trailer and putting in a checklist creating a standard operating procedure for how they set up camp because they've never had that before. And they're just kind of flown by the seat of their pants. But that's how he thinks. And so it's been a change for him. It's been good for him to be around boys who are, you know, boys, but in the same regard, he's kind of a sensitive new age guy, so they've learned to be a little more empathetic in regard to him. And so that's probably his biggest challenge is, you know, being around guys that are, you know, big guys and handling that.
Now, that's awesome to hear that the kids are more, are changing themselves, because what we find a lot of times from what we get as a lot of feedback is that one of the biggest challenges from the success of a scout is either a scout master or a den leader or someone or some type of leader that does not, you know, fully understand autism or Asperger's, and also the parents of the quote unquote neurotypical kids, you know, and that's where we find a lot of feedback. How have you experienced any of that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we have friends, you know, have known the kids for quite some time, and there are still days where they have to come to us and ask how to handle the kiddos, or they say something's happening and they don't understand why it's happening. And I say, you know, I spend a lot of time making analogies for them and explaining what, you know, to the best of my ability. I mean, I'm not on the spectrum. My husband probably is, was never diagnosed as a child, but based on our kids and self checklists and sort of, you know, he's pretty much determined that he's on the spectrum. But it's a matter of explaining it to people that are neurotypical to say, this is what it's like for them. This is what you're asking them to do. And you're really, you know, would you ask a man with no arms to jump rope and spin the rope himself? No, you wouldn't, because he's not capable of doing that. He's not physically capable. So you can't ask a child to do something he or she is not physically capable of doing. And they just have to understand what the limitations are. I know there was a time where we went out to Boy Scout camp for family night, and one of our leaders was barking at my daughter and telling her to be quiet and to stop doing whatever it was she was doing. And I said, she can't stop doing that. She's trying to calm herself down in a very chaotic situation. Oh, I said, what she's doing is not trying to disturb other people. She's trying to calm herself down and right. function in a very large group situation, and she doesn't do well in large group situations. And she said, and the other leader said, oh, I wasn't aware of that. I said, yeah. So you're asking her to do something she's not physically able to do. Oh, you know.
What we find a lot of times is leaders don't know the difference between what a sensory issue is and what a behavioral issue is. They may look
exactly.
very similar, but if they treat it differently, they can a lot of times take care of the behavioral issue if they take care of the sensory issue.
Exactly. The behavior issue goes away if the sensory issue is addressed. Exactly.
Right, and then at some later time, then you can address the actual behavior issue when the scout or when the child is more in control of their senses. That's fabulous. So you basically just explain to other leaders, you know, that what's going on that typically works for you pretty well?
What works for me with my kids?
Yeah,
when
you're telling
me?
Other leaders basically what's going on, that kind of helps the other leaders understand what's going on and helping your child to be more successful.
Well, you know, that's what spawned my master's thesis for Commissioner's College, my doctoral thesis, was the idea that, you know, as I talked to the various leaders in the Boy Scout unit, various leaders throughout, I was a day camp director, and people said, well, you know, it's not that I don't want to like this kid, it's that I don't know how to deal with this child. You know, I have no idea what's going on in his or her head, and I can't help him. And so the leaders were frustrated because they had no tools and there was no existing training to help them understand what's going on or how to deal with these children. All of the training is very, very geared toward working with neurotypical children. And when you have kids that have ADD or ADHD, you know, one of the simplest things to do is to tell them, in 5 minutes, we're going to change activities. And that works for a wide variety of children. It doesn't just work for kids on the spectrum or kids that have ADD or kids with special needs, although it's very helpful for them to cue them in as to, we're changing activities. It works. It lets all kids know. And most kids do very well. I mean, I teach school. I have a degree in education. Kids just want structure, and they want to know what's coming next. And if you warn them, they handle the change very well. And people are like, oh, it's as simple as telling them, in 5 minutes we're going to stop shooting BB guns? Absolutely. You're going to eliminate a lot of the problem of, I want to keep shooting BB guns, if you tell them that it's going to stop in 5 minutes. Now, in the case of my particular children, if you tell them the activity stops in 5 minutes, you had better have a watch on and be ready to talk in 5 minutes. Because in 5 minutes, their little internal clock goes off, and they're like, 5 minutes has gone by, it's time to stop now. You said we were stopping in 5 minutes, so you know, are we stopping now? You know, because you said we were going to, because we need to stop now.
You're not telling me the truth, you're lying.
You know, they're just, and I said, they don't have to have their watch on. They know that 5 minutes is up, and you said it's going to end, so you better be prepared to follow through. And, you know, don't use terms like later, in a while, it needs to be specific. And if you don't know how long it's going to be, say, in about 5 minutes, but it might be more, you know, be honest with them, because that's all they're looking for. You know, they're looking for a stop time. They're looking for an end to the activity. And likewise, when it's a not favored activity, you know, I don't want to do this Weeblos worksheet that I have to do, or I don't want to do citizenship. Well, but it's required, so, you know, we're only going to do this 10 more minutes, and then we're going to change. And they're like, okay, I can handle 10 more minutes, or I only want to do it for 5. But it's a matter of explaining it to people in a way that they can understand. And most people understand, if it's something you don't like, you just want to know that it's going to be over. You know, you'll
right,
handle
absolutely.
It as long as you know it's going to end.
Well, we
but
use
if you think it's going to go on forever, you don't want to do it anymore.
Right. Well, we use for our youngest, and we've been implemented in our Tiger Den, is actually a physical timer clock. And so people, not only do they know it's going to end in 5 minutes, they can watch the clock go down. And when
absolutely.
It's over, it's over, and we go on to the next thing. So what is the difference, big differences between, have you found, between Girl Scouts, Cub Scouts, and Boy Scouts when dealing with training issues between the leaders, different leaders?
Well, Girl Scouts kind of, it doesn't have as structured a training program as BSA does. GSUSA doesn't really have as structured a program. So there is less, I think, training overall for Girl Scout leaders than there is for Boy Scout leaders. Boy Scout leaders have a multitude of resources. They've got Roundtable. They've got powwows. They've got University of Scouting. They've got Wood Badge. There's an innumerable amount of resources. And granted, in my experience, none of them have been dedicated to training adults to work with special needs kids, but there's more training on how to work with scouts in general. And some of that can be applied toward working with special needs scouts. In Girl Scouts, basically there's what they call leadership essentials, which is kind of introduction to being a leader in the basic paperwork. And then they might have a training on the Journeys program, which is the new program basis for Girl Scouting, where you talk about how to implement that in your troop. And then pretty much you're on your own unless your council does some what they call adult leadership enrichment events where they offer various and sundry activities, kind of akin to powwow, University of Scouting, or roundtable activities. But there isn't as much training for Girl Scout leaders. It's kind of, here's your troop, go for it.
I think it's kind of hard, too, because with girls especially, they tend to be underdiagnosed as far as Asperger's is concerned. And, you know, where a lot of girls can slip through Girl Scouts. We're going to talk about more Girl Scout stuff next week. But just in general, I think it's harder, especially in the Girl Scouts, since a lot of the girls tend to do scripts and things like that and kind of mask, you know, their way through, if you will. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And in our experience, Asperger's was the absolute end all final diagnosis. They eliminated every other possibility before they diagnosed our daughter with Asperger's. And they were like, well, it could be this and it might be that, and let's check this out. That was not anything that they wanted to point to, even though all of the flags were there. So I do think that in girls it's underdiagnosed, and it is much more prevalent in boys. And it's easier to get diagnosed in boys, in my opinion, but that's just my personal experience.
My wife personally was a Girl Scout, and she wasn't diagnosed until she was in her 40s. So, So it doesn't get diagnosed nearly as much. We have about 5 minutes left, so I want to definitely really touch on the successful part. What other tips can you provide or think of that how your scouts can be really successful and why they can be successful in scouts?
Well, I do think that there's a wide variety, and I know you're going to put the link up for my presentation that I did for Commissioner's College for my doctoral thesis. There is a ton of suggestions in the second and third presentation. In fact, it goes through the manual for working with scouts with disabilities that BSA developed in about 1995, although my presentation that I developed actually updates some of the information because, you know, 1995, a lot of research has been done and changes have been made. It breaks down working with kids with physical disabilities, with visual impairments, with hearing impairments, with ADD, with ADHD, and I broadened the autism spectrum because in the manual, that was limited to a page and a half of information. And it was just, I was astounded. So I increased that section because I have greater experience with that. And there are tons of resources out there. When we talk more next week about Girl Scouts, I'll talk about the Try It that our Girl Scout troop developed to help our girls understand what it's like to be a scout with special needs. There are just an enormous amount of resources out there on the internet to help people if you go looking. I know that I found some stuff and people share stuff on your Facebook all the time. It is absolutely networking and sharing, and I think the more that we talk to each other and share, the more that the general population will hear about it. So it's important that we continue to talk and share our ideas so that they get into the mainstream. And honestly, all of our ideas work for kids, any kid. They're good for any kid, not just kids with special needs. And I think that's the biggest thing that people need to be aware of is that it's just what we call in the education world good teaching.
What's it called?
Good teaching.
That's what scout leaders really ultimately boil down to are teachers. Teachers of, you know, scouting skills and life skills. And why do you think scouting is a good fit for those like with Asperger's or autism specifically? Do you think because of the structure or why?
Absolutely. I think because the expectations are structured and there's an outline, you know, they hand you a merit badge book and they say to earn this merit badge, you must do steps 1 through 6. And these are the expectations. And kids with autism and on the spectrum do a fabulous job with that. When you say, this is the expectation, this is what I need you to do, they say, okay, I can do that, and they do it. And I think that it's fantastic. The path to Eagle is laid out right there in the handbook. All you have to do is follow the steps. And kids can follow the steps. Granted, it might take them a little bit longer. I always say as a teacher, every child has the capability to learn, but not every kid learns at the same speed or in the same way. So you have to be willing to look at the requirement and say, if it's asking a kid to give an oral presentation and they're not a verbal, is there another way that they can present the information in a way that would be equivalent to an oral presentation without asking them to do something they're not capable of doing? But
right.
That ties right back into that show that you had yesterday about accommodations versus modifications. So absolutely, I think that the structure is there and it gives scouts the opportunity to work on all kids the opportunity to work on their strengths and their weaknesses. Because what do you ask kids at a board of review? What have you learned? How are you strong? Where can you improve? Where are you going? All those questions get asked at a board of review. And I think that's where it really benefits kids.
That's awesome. We have like 20 seconds left. I just want to personally thank you for coming on and sharing all of this information. I'm totally looking forward to next Thursday, same time, where we're going to talk about Girl Scouts. Thank you for your time, and You have a wonderful rest of the week.
You too. I will look forward to talking to you next week, John.
Goodbye. Thank you, everyone, and have a good day.